Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Same-sex marriage is making headlines in Missouri. We'll be talking about that in a few minutes. But first, for the ninth year, the Gateway Media Literacy Partnership is sponsoring Media Literacy Week in St. Louis. Media literacy, as many people have come to know, is the process of honing critical thinking skills to better enable us to analyze and evaluate the media messages we are bombarded with every day in our newspapers, radio and television, and online. Fact is, there's a lot of questionable information floating around out there from all media sources, and it's in our best interest to improve our ability to separate the wheat from the chaff. This ninth Media Literacy Week is going to focus on science and the environment. Joining me in studio is Don Corrigan. He is a journalist and author of Environmental Missouri, Issues and Sustainability, What You Need to Know. Joining us by phone is Sock Sperry of Project Look Sharp, a media literacy initiative at Ithaca College in New York. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Don. It's great to be here.
And Sox, we'll be looking forward to seeing you in St. Louis later this week as part of the Media Literacy Week presentations. But for the purpose of our conversation, I'd like to start with Don Corrigan. Don, you know, media literacy is important for the news consumer, needless to say, and the information consumer. But it's equally important for the journalist who's doing the reporting, is it not, particularly on the issues of science and the environment?
Yes. I mean, the same things that an audience needs to examine, for example, the source of the information, what's the motivation of the people behind it, what evidence do they have for what they're, contending. Those are all things that not just the audience for news or information has to be aware of, but the journalists who are out there putting the information together need to be a little careful about where the information's coming from, what the motivation of the people are who are spreading the information.
Especially so in the areas of science, because most people are not terribly well-versed in some of these areas.
Yeah, I think we just went through an election where some politicians were making special emphasis that they're not scientists.
Right. Yeah. And given some of the things they've been saying, they've proved their point. Sox Sperry, let me turn to you. You're in Ithaca right now, I assume, are you not?
I am. That's right.
Right. You're a curriculum writer for your organization. And where is your focus, on the very young or on older young people, if you will?
Well, actually, our focus has been K-12 and then on into college and community, particularly as regards the focus on environmental education. To date, we've published 6 volumes that relate to media construction of various aspects of the environment, chemicals, endangered species, global warming, sustainability, food, water, agriculture. Those have all to date been focused pretty much on high school, college, and adult level curriculum. We've just gotten a grant from the Park Foundation, however, to transform that and move it into the earlier grades. And so for the next 2 years, I'll be working on lessons that focus on kindergarten through eighth grade adaptations, because our feeling, Don, is that it's really critical for students at all different levels, including adults as well, to be able to do just what Don's talking about, to be able to think critically about our world, particularly as regards these critical issues around our environment and the science that associates with it.
How do you teach that?
Well, in my project with Project Look Sharp, what we do is we feel that it's critical to do 2 things. One is to help students develop habits of inquiry around media consumption, since we're all consuming media of different kinds all the time. The best way we think to do that is to take particular media documents and deconstruct them, look at them, ask the key questions that Don was asking. Who made this? For what purpose? What's included? What's left out? What's the bias? How do I find more about this? But then also at the same time in the classroom to select documents that will help teach the core content that teachers need to teach in school around English, language arts, math, science, social studies. So my wonderful job is to find rich media documents that can both teach to the core content, but at the same time help develop these habits of inquiry.
I suppose that our reliance today, the reliance of so many people on electronic information, if you will, the internet, online, our telephones, our iPads, what complicates things somewhat, because a lot of this information is coming from places where we don't know the source.
It does complicate it, but on the other hand, we also have access to track down what those sources are in ways that perhaps we didn't 20 or 30 years ago. When I'm creating some of this curriculum and want to sort of get to the bottom of who put this photograph into this particular blog post, it's easier for me to begin to track that and find where the origins of that information is. So although it is complex, and we live in a world of ever-increasing complexity when it comes to the media, there's also an ever-increasing source of information, if we know where to look and how to look, to help find those answers to where this comes from and what are the interests behind them.
And Don Corrigan, Sox mentioned video and photographs. That is a further complication because of what can be done in this kind of media today. Photoshop is out there. Videos can be taken, as was the case, I believe, during demonstrations in Iran a couple of years ago, which was purported to have been taken that day and which it was later revealed was taken some years before.
Yeah, and I'm more of a wordsmith print person, mm-hmm. so I'm aware of what happens with that. But it's interesting to me what can be done with all the tweets and the social media that's out there. And what kind of misinformation is out there right now, whether it's on the environment or what's going on with Ferguson. It's kind of scary what people are kind of glomming onto and deciding, well, this is what's happening.
It's really changed everything, has it not? And let's just stay with Ferguson for a moment, because you and I are very familiar, Sox not so much, I'm sure, with a lot of the stuff that's been floating around very recently about, you know, this perceived apocalypse when the verdict or the ruling comes down on Darren Wilson's guilt or innocence in the Michael Brown case.
Yes, I really didn't expect this show to be coming off today, because there was so much information out late last week that said Sunday afternoon or Monday is when the verdict's going to come down, and we were getting emails from all kinds of folks about how they're getting ready in various ways for this verdict, and also a lot of schools and hospitals were talking about how they were going to provide safe haven for this. It's sort of a classic example of the world we're living in. It really is McLuhan's era of the mass rumor going around. And so how do you sort through all that, and how do you react rationally to all that?
Sox, how do you? And again, how do you teach that? I mean, because this is just an entirely different element than the kinds of things that people like you and Don have been working on for these many years now.
Well, I think what's key is what was mentioned earlier in our conversation, which is developing habits of critical thinking. We all need that. You know, this is a new issue, but it's also a longstanding issue. At LookSharp, we like to quote Jefferson way back at the start. He said, an enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. And for that reason, early on in the founding of the nation, newspapers were subsidized in part so that people could get information. Now, of course, back then, newspapers were partisan. Many would argue that newspapers are still pretty partisan these days. So this capacity to be able to think critically about sources, whether they're about climate change, Ferguson, or the intersection of climate change and Ferguson, this has been with us for a long time and needs to continue. And I think the way to do it is to create respectful dialogue around contentious and complex issues that invite people to ask questions and listen to one another speaking about it. It's not easy to do, but as a classroom teacher and a community educator for years, my experience is that when we find ways to do that with respect and sort of a conscientious attention to continuing to ask these questions of one another, then we can begin to make some headway toward developing the critical thinking skills that we all need.
Is there any one area of media in which we have to be especially vigilant, would you say? And I'll put that to you first, then come back to Don.
Yeah. Well, You know, it's I think that's perhaps an interesting generational question. It may be different from my generation. I'm in my 60s now when it comes to the kinds of media that I tend to adhere to or go to than in my son's generation or my nieces and nephews, even younger. So there are many different media forms out there, new ones coming all the time. I would argue that in our present context, obviously dealing with digital media in all its many forms is really pretty critical. And we have to develop the patience to be able to spend some time with a particular document going through and asking these questions. And I think that the fast-paced nature of media consumption these days and moving from one thing to another, multitasking, makes that a daunting challenge. But I think it's a really important one when it comes to being able to get the root out of it.
And Don Corrigan, your thoughts on that part of it?
Well, I look at young people, the millennials, and where they get their information from, and I'm concerned. But I think all of us who are in our 60s are concerned about, you know, the new social media and are they checking out where the evidence comes from. I got a kick out of CNN's program on media yesterday morning, and Dan Rather kind of set the narrator straight because he was talking about, well, who won this election media-wise, and is MSNBC going to lose its ratings because of this? And Dan Rather said, This discussion is irrelevant because young people aren't watching TV anymore. And that's true. In my classes, my media class, start talking about television and their eyes glaze over because they're not watching television at all. This isn't even a relevant discussion to them on whether the TV and cable have gotten politicized or not because they're all looking at their Facebook sites and tweeting. They're in a whole different world than their parents.
Or they're watching the Colbert Report, they're watching Daily, and they're assuming to a very large degree that these are kind of news people out there.
Well, they are kind of news people these days, you know.
Well, that's the source of a lot of news for a lot of young folks today. We don't want to make this a generational discussion because we'll come off, I think, poorly if we get into that. But times are changing.
This weekend I was with the Missouri Environmental Educators Conference in Columbia, and I have a lot of respect for the people that Sox Berry works with because in green education, they're really teaching these kids. In some ways, I think they're ahead of college educators in what they're teaching young people about how to dissect these messages. I was impressed that when it comes to media, they ask their students to write more or less what we would call an op-ed piece and then turn around and write it from the other side, the other perspective, whether it's climate change or green energy issues. And I think that's something that more of us journalists need to do is look at both sides, see where the information's coming from, and not just write a rant on some of these topics.
Sox, do you want to add to that before I take a break?
I do. I just want to say I couldn't agree more with what Don's saying in this regard. We call this weak sense, strong sense, critical thinking, which means that I really need to develop the capacity to critique not just the things that I sort of automatically disagree with and can critique, but also be able to ask key questions about things that I agree with, ask some of the very same questions. Where's this information coming from? What's the bias? What's left out here? I think that's really critical, and maybe after break we can talk some about how students themselves are active and engaged in creating media and raising some of their own questions, because that's really a key part of this work as well.
We will do that. We'll take that break now. You just heard from Sox Berry of Project Look Sharp. It's a media literacy initiative at Ithaca College in New York. Sox Berry will be conducting morning and afternoon workshops on using tools of media literacy on environmental issues Wednesday at the Merrimack Community College Student Center. It's all part of Media Literacy Week. Also, Don Corrigan, who is with us, he is a journalist, and he's author of the book Environmental Missouri, Issues and Sustainability, What You Need to Know. He also will be participating in Media Literacy Week all week here in St. Louis. Back to continue with our conversation. Take your questions if you have any concerning media literacy, what it is and how it works. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. We'll take an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org or a tweet at STL on air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation on media literacy with journalist Don Corrigan and Sox Sperry of Ithaca College in New York. Sox, let me come back to you and have you pick up on the point you wanted to make just before the break concerning the students and the upper grade students.
And this would apply, actually, Don, not just to upper grade, but younger students as well. You know, we define media literacy at Project Look Sharp as the ability to access, analyze, evaluate, and create media. And so my work with the curriculum project oftentimes focuses on the analysis and evaluation part. But I think the creation part is also really critical. And Don was just referencing a while ago having students create different posts themselves that might represent different perspectives on a particular issue, and perhaps put those out and then interact with people in a public setting, in through social network channels or otherwise. I think this capacity to engage students as media creators, anyone who's involved in social media is such these days, and then invite them also to be thinking about these same questions when it comes to a tweet, a blog post, a YouTube posting, these same kind of questions. Who's making it? For what purpose? To what end? Who's benefits and who may be harmed by it? How different people would interpret these messages? These are the kind of habitual critical thinking questions that we want to invite students to do. And when they become media producers, it's a question that also must follow for themselves.
Don, did you? Go ahead.
I think that it's important for people who get into media literacy, particularly when they're looking at the topic this week, to get past the scapegoating and the stereotyping that takes place. So many times, anybody who's interested in the environment is somebody they think that is running around talking about global warming all the time, that they're anti-development. I was impressed talking to these teachers this weekend about what they're really talking about is smart development, energy efficiency. They're not anti-business. They're very concerned about what the new legislature is going to do because in a session 2 years ago, they passed the Agenda 21 resolution that was against the United Nations Agenda 21 that said there should be promotion of sustainability and smart development, and the legislature passed this thing saying we don't want any of this Resolution 21 from the United Nations in the language of our curriculum, of our schools. Teachers are very concerned about whether that's going to come up again and whether they're going to be sort of hampered in the process of trying to teach these kinds of green issues. They're not anti-development. They're smart development.
While we're on the subject of climate change, let me just make a point here. I think most people would agree that the overwhelming science is that climate change is in fact happening and that it's man-made. And yet many journalists feel compelled when they're doing a story on climate change to give equal weight to the climate change deniers, even though the science is overwhelmingly on the other side. Does media literacy come into this? And
I get a lot of heat on that all the time when I'm wearing my Webster Kirkwood Times hat as a newspaper guy because, and it's, in some ways, it's actually more strident than what I get from the deniers. And they say, why do you keep running these letters from the climate skeptics? Why do you keep running articles where you put this information in that there are these skeptics? And you know, my concern is, that especially when it comes to letters to the editor, that's meant to be a forum. And I think it's useful for people to know whether that there are people that are rejecting what science is telling us. And it's not a small number of people. It's a little bit different.
Right.
You know, depending on what region of the country you're in, obviously in Massachusetts, where you have the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and 80 universities, they're on board with climate change. Global warming's happening. You get into other states, including Missouri, it's a 50-50 breakdown.
Sox, what's your impression of this in the media literacy context?
Well, my feeling is good media literacy education must really have a respect for every point of view and ask people to really digest in a deep way and in a respectful way as well, with contending perspectives, as I said before, including ones that we don't agree with. We put a collection of lessons together a while back called Media Construction of Global Warming that includes representations created by climate change skeptics and those by folks on the other side, and ask difficult, challenging questions about both. I'm going to show a clip in my climate change workshop on Wednesday of a teacher decoding a lesson that includes a film clip from the great global warming swindle, climate change skeptics creation. But then also we'll critique an aspect of Any Convenient Truth, Al Gore's film about climate change. And my feeling is it's just really important for us to be able to engage wherever we are. I lived for 33 years in the Midwest in a particular community that had a lot of letters to the editor, very much along the lines of what Don's saying. And I think we have to bring all of these voices into the conversation. If we don't, we're really missing out on an important aspect of the complexity and diversity within our culture.
Is it really realistic to expect people to do the amount of work that's necessary to analyze the information they're receiving? I mean, it takes time. Our society does not take time to do a lot of things these days. I'm just wondering how realistic an approach this is.
Well, I think if we're going to survive as a society and a culture and move forward in ways that I think all of us really want for our children and grandchildren, we have to have this capacity. And it's not that it's impossible. You know, Don referenced before teachers that he's been talking with who do great work in this regard. I spent a bunch of time in preparation for my presentation going through Don's Environmental Missouri Issues and Sustainability book. Great materials in there. A very sort of diverse, wide range of multiple perspectives about this. I think we have to believe that we can do this, Don, and that that we must do it.
I mean, I think if we want a democracy, we have to follow Thomas Jefferson's advice that we need to be informed. We need to study the issues and in order to make informed decisions.
Well, Don Carding, I'll put this to you because I know you're close to the Gateway Media Literacy Partnership. Why the focus this time specifically on environment and STEM issues, science issues?
I think because a lot of them are in our backyard here in St. Louis. You know, we're still dealing with lead contamination in Herculaneum. There's still questions being raised about dioxin contamination in the area, questions about what's left over from the Times Beach cleanup. When the Society of Environmental Journalists came here a few years ago, they called St. Louis Atomic City because of the atomic debris that was left over from the development of nuclear weapons here in St. Louis. And we've got a burning landfill going on right now in the Bridgeton area, and the landfill burning's getting very close to where there's also a radioactive dump. So we have it all in our backyard. That's why it makes sense to look at this here in St. Louis.
And Sox, this is an area of particular concern to you?
It surely is. And I'm delighted, actually, that the workshop that I've been encouraged to create in the afternoon, titled Environmental Frontlines, Learning to Read the World Right Where We Live. And I'll be taking issues, many of which I pulled from Don's recommendations in his book, having to do with St. Louis landfills, radiation concerns, Monsanto and GMOs, the Ozark River protection, each one of which with different media documents from local media producers around the St. Louis area that are presenting different contending perspectives about this. Bringing it back to where I live, the last major curriculum collection that we put together was called Media Construction of the Finger Lakes. On sustainability, food, water, and agriculture. And again, we used issues and topics, media documents from here, from the Finger Lakes region where I live in upstate New York, as a model to encourage other people to create sustainability-centered, environment-centered, systems thinking, critical thinking, media literacy curriculum that focuses on areas where we live, because that's where our students, our teachers, our families are most concerned, and we've got to develop the capacity to ask these key questions right at home.
Don Corrigan, we're going to put information concerning the events that are taking place this week during Media Literacy Week on our website at stlpublicradio.org. But give us kind of an overview, if you will, of some of the things that that are going to be talked about this week.
Well, as we're speaking, they're doing a tour out of Washington University on environmental architecture in the area. Randall Hyman on Tuesday is doing a session on environmental photography. Sox Ferry will be at Merrimack doing the workshops on media literacy and the environment. We have a great panel session that the Press Club is sponsoring at Webster University at noon on Thursday. I'm really glad that I'm the moderator because I'm looking forward to seeing what these reporters have to say about the flack or the feedback they get for the stories they do.
Lots going on. Anybody is invited, I assume. That's generally the case.
Yes, everybody. And come with your skepticism or your arguments and for or against on these issues. We'll have some fun.
All right. Well, again, that information will be in more detail on our website, stlpublicradio.org. We have an email here from Madonna in Crestwood. She says, I regularly access the site PolitiFact, which ostensibly evaluates statements made by politicians and media sources for their veracity. Can your guests comment on that site as well as any other fact-checking sites that they've found to aid them in the areas of media literacy? Sox, I'll start with you.
Well, one of the first major curriculum I worked on for Project Look Sharp was media construction of presidential campaigns. We did this for the 2004 campaign, and we updated it for 2008, taking media documents from those campaigns, but then going back through American history all the way back to the 1800 first contested campaign between Thomas Jefferson and John Adams. And I'm referencing this because we're really focusing on these same kind of issues that we're talking about all the way up until the present day when it comes to issues of who to believe and what to believe. So around the PolitiFact question, there, you may remember, was a rumor in the 2008 campaign that candidate Barack Obama was a secret Muslim, and so we created a lesson where we went back to the original anonymous email that put this out and that really went viral, and then took a look at various different representations in the media critiquing or challenging that, including a factcheck.org, one of these organizations that takes a look at and tries to come to some conclusions about what's true and what's not true. And so my feeling is it's really important for us to go to sources like that and also at the same time to question them as well. We don't want to just sort of have a situation where default we accept whatever PolitiFact says or factcheck.org. But it's a great idea because they can really point us in a good direction to take a look at the next step of it.
Don, the political season certainly brings this whole issue into question in terms of evaluating things politicians say in their commercials, for instance.
Yes, and PolitiFact's a great resource to go and take a look at what's not true and what is true on this advertising. But they're overwhelmed at this point because, you know, with the spigots open, with the Citizens case, over $3 billion in advertising spent on a midterm election, for God's sake. What's going to happen in 2016? What are we looking at?
Well, this is certainly a tremendous challenge for people who are into the media literacy thing.
If
you don't have fact check, how do you do it?
The good thing about that onslaught of advertising is I talked to Democrats, Republicans, liberals, conservatives who just turned off. They said that it's too much. We're not paying attention to either one of them. I don't know if that can be taken at face value, but
To wit, the number of people who show up to vote, particularly in midterm elections. Let's go to the phones. I want to bring in Paul calling from St. Louis. I think he takes exception to some wording earlier in the program. Paul, go ahead.
Hi, Don. First off, I really appreciate the show, and your show is one of my principal information for conduits for multiple information. And I guess my question for you and the panel is, with respect to media literacy, at what point does the show, like St. Louis on the Air, at what point is it the show's responsibility to call a guest on something when, you know, so should we view St. Louis on the Air as the earlier guest said, as an op-ed letter or a letter to the editor, or is it a news show? And my specific point, Don, was, you know, I covered, listened to quite a bit the Michael Brown coverage, and on one of the shows, one of the guests three times in the course of the show referred to the officer as a murderer, or he murdered Michael Brown. And I was expecting you to call the guest on that, and there wasn't. You know, it was just allowed to go through and pass. So I guess my question is, to further media literacy on a show like St. Louis on the Air, is it your job to sort of police this and rein in some things that aren't factually correct, or is it to simply let the person do his or her letter to the editor thing?
It's a little bit of everything. Number one, this is not a news show. We certainly deal with issues that are in the news, but we are not part of the news department to do a news show. And if I let that get through, then that's on me. I should have challenged that, and if I didn't, then I should be chastised and criticized for that. But those kinds of things do happen. People do come onto the program and have their say and have their point of view. For the most part, we let people's individual points of view go by unless it's such an egregious mistake that it has to be challenged. But you're absolutely right. If I let that go by, I should have challenged it. But we do want people to express their views. We encourage that, as a matter of fact. So, Paul, I thank you for the call, and thank you for pointing that out. I'll try to be more vigilant in the future, because I certainly should have been in that case.
And again, it's a great show.
Well, thank you for that. You've got great taste. Thank you so much. Let me bring in Ron from Jennings, Missouri. We'll get a comment from Ron and then move on. Go ahead, Ron.
Don, I really love this show. I'm so happy that we have that available to us here in St. Louis. With regard to the discussion that was taking place on climate change, but also on other issues, I'd like to ask the educators, what do you do? How do you handle it when somebody says, well, that's what the Bible says? That's why I believe that's true, and that kind of ends the discussion for them. What do you do when you're dealing with students that take that kind of attitude?
Ron, good question. We're hearing a lot of that sort of thing lately. Don, would you like to start, and we'll go to Sox after that?
I get some of that from my students who will question, you know, the very foundation of the course that I'm in. They'll say, hey, the Bible says that we have dominion over the earth. We can do with it what we want to, and there's an afterlife that we should be more concerned with now. You don't really want to challenge people's religious beliefs, but you do need to point out that there's a lot of different interpretations of the Bible, and a lot of different religions have different takes on it. So we have to go through that. A lot of people interpret that dominion over the earth as stewardship, and that's what we need to be doing. So that's the kind of discussion we get into.
Yeah. Sox?
Well, I'm looking at one of the key questions to ask when analyzing media messages, which is one of the forms I use all the time, created by the National Association for Media Literacy Education and Project Look Sharp, and my eyes going to how might different people understand this message differently. And I know that applies to the Bible. It also applies to other forms that people really rely on themselves. I think that the truth is that we all really do have different interpretations. Media messages are constructed both by the person who's making them, but also they're constructed by those of us who are interpreting them. And different Christians can read messages in the Bible in very different ways. And I think Don's right. You've got to be careful about doing this in the classroom. But I think it's important to say that kind of argument can shut down discussion and critical thinking, and we don't want to do that as educators and citizens.
You want to do just the opposite, obviously.
Yep.
I'm going to have to let it go at that, gentlemen. Our time is up, unfortunately, but folks will have an opportunity to continue this type of dialogue throughout the week by getting involved in Media Literacy Week, which is taking place all week here in St. Louis. Our guests on today's program, Sox Berry and Don Corrigan, are both going to be associated with various panels and presentations during the week. All of the information concerning Media Literacy Week can be found on our website at stlpublicradio.org. I want to thank you, Sox Berry, for being with us. with us on this program. We'll welcome you in St. Louis tomorrow afternoon, I understand, for your event on Wednesday. Thank you so much for being with us. And Don Corrigan, great to see you again. To keep up the good work with your various publications here in town, as I know you will. But thank you, Don, so much for being with us. When we continue, lots of recent court action in Missouri on same-sex marriage, and it looks like lots more ahead. More on that in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.